Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor-adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
Wow, what a limousine explosion of an episode.
Yeah, so week two of JoJo's Bachelorette experience, and things really took a turn for the violently misogynistic.
Mostly thanks to one particularly masculine suitor.
Yes, this week on The Bachelorette, our fair damsel had a choice. Did she want a bevy of compliment-giving, hobby-having, emotion-feeling boys, or a sliced turkey-chewing, pull-up-doing, protein shake-making man? Actually, she didn't really have a choice. She wanted a man, and that's something that Chad already knew perfectly well.
He knew a lot about men and a lot about men protein shakes. So much to learn from him. And today, in our quest to figure out what exactly is wrong with Chad and whether it's fixable, we're joined by one of our favorite Bachelor alumni, Charlene Joint.
Aw, thank you guys. It's nice to be back.
Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot to dive into.
A lot, yes.
Yeah, at a certain point this episode, just trying to keep track of moments that weren't horrifically offensive, but they were few and far between.
Yeah, he really just couldn't stop. I do feel like he's playing the part, though, with gusto.
Yeah.
He's really embracing his own villain persona, but in a way that feels like he might genuinely be a garbage human versus JJ, who was a charming villain.
Well, you say that in retrospect, having seen him
in person.
Oh, in person as well, yeah. It's funny how he says something like what you said. He was like, she's a woman. She wants a man. Like, he knows what she wants, apparently. Yeah. Yet when everyone's upset that they didn't get a date, he's like, you guys haven't known her. Like, we don't know her. Like, what's there to love? He doesn't know her well enough
to know if he likes her. He just knows her well enough to know that she wants him.
Well, I'm not sure if you realize, but Chad has met a lot of beautiful women. Therefore, he is an expert on what women in general want, only beautiful ones, which is him.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he might not be so giving to a not beautiful woman. Not that he was particularly giving to JoJo.
I'm confused that you keep saying words like women. Who are all these women? What's a woman?
Girls.
Get it right.
Thank you.
He's never met any beautiful women, only beautiful girls.
Exactly. Mm. A girl like JoJo doesn't need a boy. She needs a man. Who are boys supposed to date if girls are off the table? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But so the first group date, honestly, even when Chad wasn't involved, things were very kind of misogynistic. Like, the first group date is literally like save the damsel in distress.
Well, it started out okay with her like putting out the fire. I'm like, yeah, this is off to a great start. Yeah. And then suddenly she was completely helpless. Yeah. And
I was into it at first. Like, yes.
She looked hot too.
She looked super hot.
Yeah. Yeah, with her big fireman pants. Firewoman pants.
Use that hose. The jokes really wrote themselves.
Yeah, Daniel, I think, made that joke.
I loved Wells on this date. Okay. He's adorable.
I fully fell in love with him. It's like, this is a man who is terrible at tests of physical strength, carries around photos of his dog, and is self-deprecating. Obviously, I'm all in. This is the first time someone who's been my type has ever been on the Bachelor.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. He's totally atypical for this show. And I like that, like, usually a guy on this show in his position would get really defensive and be like, this is a stupid activity anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? You know, and he was just like, I'm going to try not to die.
And that was so appealing. Lean into your weaknesses, man.
Yeah. That's the thing is that usually the men on the show have a hard time embracing that it's about having fun, which we're really seeing embodied in Chad this season. that it's not about winning the activity. It's about having fun with it and showing that you're, like, laid back and you'll be pleasant to do things with over the course of a lifetime together. And Wells was the embodiment of that. He was like, I might not be able to save you in a life-threatening situation, but you'll have a good chuckle as we die together in an inferno.
Yeah. Yeah, he won me over. He was so cute.
So on that group date, I think we had also Vinny, Daniel, the model. Why is he still here? Ali, who did not get enough screen time this episode.
We have not seen enough Ali.
He is so cute.
He's so cute.
He is Prince Ali or Aladdin.
Yeah. Yes.
He really is.
He is.
More Ali.
So charming. Luke, who grew on me this episode.
Me too.
He was cool. Grant, a real firefighter.
It would have been so embarrassing for Grant had he not won this challenge.
Yeah. It made me feel reassured that our actual firefighters are good at saving people from burning buildings.
You're right. If he had not won, that just would have been so embarrassing. But now he's just, like, at par. He's back where he started.
Yeah, and some random other people were there who
James
all looked the same.
Who, for some reason, is getting more screen time than Ali, even though there's nothing
Who's
interesting
James
about
F?
Him. The one who owns a boxing club and
I
wears a lot of plaid shirts.
I think he's the one who wears undershirts. Crew neck undershirts.
Really narrowing it down for me, Claire.
Undershirts are no longer a thing, so I really noticed that. Okay. I'm like, are you one of my high school classmates? Like, come on. He doesn't have a lot going for him.
Yeah, I've just seen a photo. Yeah, he's had some funny ITMs, I feel like.
He's good at narrating.
Yeah.
So I think that's why he's been getting some screen time.
Yeah.
Him and,
that is valuable.
And the other James, James S., the Bachelor superfan.
I was so sad.
He grew on me this episode also.
I wanted him to stay for
me too.
A while.
I felt like he had some Tanner qualities.
Yeah. I saw myself in him.
He was a good stand-in for the audience.
Yeah. Basically, the group date, to backtrack a little bit, it starts with all the men coming outside to find a limo literally just burning to a crisp in front of them.
Which they seemed pretty calm about.
They seemed really chill about it. I was like, what if this was an accident?
Yeah.
Like, no one
You're
seemed
so
to...
jaded by the fact that weird things are going to happen. I think you're like, well, yeah, this is just so obviously a stunt.
Chase and is in the moment. It was like, oh, I was like, is JoJo in there? Should I get a fire extinguisher?
Yeah, does someone need to be a hero here?
Yeah, I was like, dude, Chase, if JoJo is in that limo, a fire extinguisher is going to do nothing for her at this point.
Well,
like, it's
Chase
over.
Chase is not a firefighter, Claire.
No, that's true. So
the second half of the first group date, in which Chad is actually not a part of, Grant gets a little bit of one-on-one time. They seem to, you know, he'll stick around for a little while.
I have nothing against Grant. I just feel neither here nor there about him.
He's a little boring. And he makes a comment about how he'll always tell her that he loves her because he might die in a fire, which was dark.
That reminded me of his limo exit, how he's like, I won't fall in love with two women. I'll only fall in love with you or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't like the how it sounds like this is definitely going to happen. Like, he should be like, I wouldn't fall in love with two.
Right.
If I had more than one romantic option in this moment.
That as well. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he's doing the thing that Chad is a little hyper attuned to, which is acting like they are already in love.
Yes.
He seems very well intentioned, but.
Yes.
That was impressive,
the firefighting thing. I mean,
also, that's sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really impressive.
I think JoJo's into that, but she was also really into Wells's vulnerable thing, which surprised me because I think she's really into traditional manly.
That made me like her even more. I was like, I'm glad that you realize that that's adorable.
I feel like JoJo was a little more open-minded in terms of like, oh, I don't need a guy who's 6 feet tall, or I don't need a guy that's super ripped.
Yeah, there is more variation.
Yeah.
Right, we have Alex.
She doesn't want America to think that she doesn't like short men,
according to Chad. Chad seems very, not to go back to Chad, but to go back to
it's
Chad.
It's so hard not to.
This is
very,
the Chad
very
podcast.
Preoccupied with the fact that Alex is not super tall.
Yeah.
Which is such an indication of insecurity on his part to me. Alex is a Marine.
Yeah, and that's low-hanging fruit to make fun of someone's height.
Right, it's, like, it's completely out of their control. And also, Alex is doing pretty well.
He's hot.
He's really cute. Yeah.
Sorry, Chad. You don't have to be 6 feet to be attractive.
Yeah.
No.
Did either of you notice that there was a brief aside in which we learned that Evan has children?
Yeah.
They like just glossed over it.
Three children,
yeah,
I think.
In that's the preview. A lot. He's like 28.
No, he's 33 or 34.
I love Evan. I really like him. You guys don't like him. Oh,
no,
my God.
I know that he's there
his deal
to be
breakers
made fun
are so
of.
Bad.
What are his deal breakers?
Chipped nail polish.
Oh. I mean,
and
he
girls
doesn't...
with food allergies.
You're yes. kidding.
No, yeah. That's written on.
Oh. Maybe that's, he was trying to be funny?
His bio was so maybe. Douchey, but he's
so
not.
Bad.
He's coming off pretty funny.
Yeah, I really like him. I like how expressive he is.
I just wish
yeah.
his hair was better.
Oh,
he's
his
coming
hair.
Off well, but I also think that everyone is coming off well right now because Chad is getting yeah. the hardcore villain edit. And mm-hmm. I wonder yes. if, like, once Chad leaves, that'll be shifted around a little bit.
I've got to say, if Chad had not been in yesterday's episode, though, it would have been a snore.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he really
was
brought
very
it.
Entertaining.
Yeah. I want him to stick
like
around.
The deli meat, I don't know what was going on with that, but I was laughing.
He must have eaten literal
it.
Pounds of it.
I loved it.
Okay. We have to come back to that. We are getting
okay.
so far off track.
Okay.
Okay. So group date, number one, Grant gets a kiss. So does Luke. Hardcore makeout.
Yeah, that was pretty
he
an
really,
epic one.
Yeah.
They Luke is going to be around for a while. She's with very into
doubt.
Luke.
Yeah.
And he is growing on me.
And yeah. he was last out of the limo. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Jordan was first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we
contenders.
Go.
Major players.
Yeah.
And Wells gets the group date rose.
Yeah.
Which made me really happy.
Yeah. That was pretty sweet. And then it's the first one-on-one, which goes to Derek. Who is Derek?
He's John Krasinski. He's so cute.
Yes, yes.
I found him on Instagram. I was doing a down the rabbit hole Instagram yeah. stalking of all of the men.
As you do.
And his selfies on his Instagram look exactly like John Krasinski. It's uncanny.
Wait, he's got a lot of selfies that makes
there
me like him
selfies.
Slightly less.
There's some selfies.
I'm fickle, what can I say?
Yeah.
Well, he seems to be very good friends with Wells, according to social media,
okay.
and which made me like him more.
Okay.
I like how he's so, like, humble. Like, I feel like he makes fun of himself or can make fun of himself.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we have anything else to say about Derek's one-on-one date? Do we have anything at all to
I
say?
I have things to say.
About their hard choices they made?
Was there anything else said the entire time except really just not even, it's not even a pun. They're just like, we made some choices today. Yes, that's literally what you did. It's not, and JoJo just being like, well, this was so great going here with Derek. This was perfect. We got to make some really difficult choices together throughout the day. And I'm like, you're describing a first date. That sounds so terrible.
It's true, actually.
Can you make it sound a little bit more fun? Like, she seemed to be trying to convey that they had a good time.
Two private planes. That's what you did.
One of them might have been a boat, because the other option was sea.
True.
In which case, I think they made the right choice.
Yeah, it was not that eventful.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems really normal, like real
which
guy.
Is not going to bode yeah. that well for him.
Yeah, yeah, probably not. But yeah, I'm a fan. I think he's
I would
adorable.
Hang out with him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Derek has a nice date, gets the rose. And group date two is Jordan, Christian, Nick, James Taylor, Alex, and Chad.
Dun, dun, dun.
And they wind up at ESPN, where JoJo throws a little shade at Steph Curry, who is busy leading an enormous, truly staggering come-from-behind NBA semifinals.
You know, I don't know what you're talking about.
Whatever.
Wait, do you know what she's talking about?
They came from behind to win the series in Game 7 last night. It was very exciting.
Yay.
He's very, very talented. Anyway, she called him pretty decent or something like that. Like JoJo.
I,
this is why women shouldn't be on
sports
shows.
The beginning completely lost me.
Anyway, so they're at ESPN, and fortunately that means there are some men there to pick JoJo's future husband.
they also uniquely qualified to judge her future partners.
Just random dudes who work at ESPN.
I did appreciate that this was the Bachelor franchise fully embracing that they are a TV sport.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is an argument that many people have made. Like, The Bachelor and Bachelorette are the best sport on TV. And I liked seeing that sort of meta commentary. Like, yeah, we're going all in on it.
Yeah, they did the power rankings at the end. So they basically, they have two sports announcers to sort of oversee the day's events, pick the best man for JoJo, protect her, as they put it, from the dudes.
Yeah.
Taking the role of her brothers,
yes,
if you will.
Which we were so excited to see her out in the wild, free from her brothers at last, but not for long. And so they set up in sort of the reenactment space that they have, where there's a mini sort of football field. They set up some romance-themed games.
Some obstacle courses.
I didn't understand this activity. And it could
be because I don't
know sports at all.
No,
like
I don't think there was much.
The dancing thing was
an
end zone dance.
Oh, yeah. Like when you've just scored a goal or something?
A touchdown.
Yeah.
This isn't Juan Pablo's season.
I think they just really wanted
rose.
Jordan to have a chance to mention the fact that he used to play football and his brother currently
plays
football.
But really it was more a chance for Chad to mock Jordan for no longer playing football and for having a brother who plays football. And they all did really weird end zone dances. One of them
with
took a shower, and then there was a proposal event.
And that is when Chad takes the opportunity to call JoJo Naggy.
Yeah. So all of the men do a proposal that is flowery. What they're giving her a preview of what a proposal from them would be like. They, you know, my queen, my heart, you're my
reason.
Everything. Yes. Whew. I think that was Christian.
Yes, it was.
I do have a little crush on Christian. I think he's adorable.
Yeah.
They're doing the proposals. All the men are doing these flowery proposals. And Chad is just stewing because they're all lying to JoJo. They don't know that she's their queen. They don't know that they love everything about her. They just met her. This is insane. Are they actors or are they men? And so he gets down on one knee and says, "Will you marry me?" Which, by the way, is a lie because he's not really asking her to marry him.
So he's also
an actor. And she says, "Is that it? You know, like you're not going to, nothing about how much you love me or whatever." And
he's like, if we're at the point where I'm proposing, you know how much I love you.
Yeah.
You know what I love about you. What? You need me to tell you all the things I love
about
you?
It's nice to hear it.
It's a peeve of mine when men can't compliment, you know, just freely like that. Or when a girl clearly is fishing. Like, what's the big deal?
Also, you're on the Bachelorette. You're on the Bachelorette.
Yeah.
You are. Your only purpose on this show is to vie for the affections of the woman.
Yeah.
So get on board or take yourself out of the game.
Yeah.
But he knows what she wants. She wants someone who will call her Naggy instead of giving her a compliment.
I feel like he read one of those pickup artist manuals teaches
negging.
Men how to neg women.
He 100% spends all his free time on two subreddits.
For men's
the
rights
red pill
activists.
Yeah, and a bodybuilding one. All his time.
You're totally right. The negging thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He just can't. It's like he's trying to target her and therefore is pretending like he doesn't care about her.
So basically Chad is a huge bad sport and is the worst.
And all the other men kind of call him out. And then Chad...
I thought Jordan called him out the best, can I just say, when he was like... You know, they all had to like vote who they're like...
Who was the worst?
Yeah, they're doing the final event as like a post game interview style.
And Jordan was like, he was like, "I love you, buddy, Chad, but you know, I just feel like the word naggy and a proposal don't go hand in hand."
I thought that was great.
Yeah,
he did well. He was not super aggressive about it, but got his point across.
Yeah,
which was nice.
Yeah, That those are the dates.
Oh yeah, James Taylor.
Yes.
Gets the rose because
he won the power rankings.
Oh yes,
yeah, which is unexpected actually.
Yeah, I think shocked.
They found him very charming. He seems to be getting along really well with all the other men.
Yeah.
He seems to be someone who just kind of has fun, and then he could also open up and be vulnerable.
Yeah, he made her cry.
Right, he wrote a whole thing.
Yeah, it was really. Yeah.
He wrote a
sweet
speech.
I'm sorry. The thing that he said though, a smile is the only thing you see on the outside that comes from the inside. I was like, all that does is immediately make me think of all the things that you see on the outside that come from the inside, and most of them are not appropriate to mention on a podcast.
Okay, so we're
cocktail hour.
Yeah.
So
more Chad. Like meat fest. Yeah.
Okay. I never realized that there even was food at the cocktail hour until this episode.
Are you kidding?
They never really show it.
That's why they're all like milling about in the kitchen.
They never show people eating, really.
Yeah, because usually, like, the camera, like, I don't know, that's sort of like a no-go zone unless something's happening in there.
I would eat
all
the free food.
You were just stuffing deli meat in your face.
Well, that's not always. It's just for roast ceremonies, so.
Also, was the spread good?
Yes. But the problem is you don't want to, like, if you're wearing, like, a tight dress, you're not going to, like, stuff your face.
That wasn't a problem for Chad.
No, he did not have that insecurity.
He didn't want to miss a day of protein because then the whole structure, you know, just goes to fat, is what I've heard.
That was the most relatable Chad has been, though, on the series, was him just standing by the snack table.
I don't know. It started out relatable, and then,
it got extreme.
It got to the point where he was walking up to the risers for the rose ceremony, just eating a wad of sliced meat like an apple. And I was like, it's probably pretty late at night, and you've been eating wads of meat for hours, and you can't just take a little break?
I agree. Like, I felt like they could have taken these different clips of him eating just in different settings and, like, just put them all in to make it seem like he was eating all throughout the night.
Yeah.
But the fact that they had ITMs of, like, six different guys talking about how much meat he was eating.
Yeah.
And then that, he was on the risers.
Yeah.
Still eating. It was,
that's
like,
the thing.
So funny. At that point, it's been, like, 6 hours.
But that was the thing, is that I'm very conscious of, like, if it was just sort of little snippets of him on the couch over here or standing over there.
It seemed constant, though.
But it was, identifiable moments, you know, that were spread out over the night.
Yeah.
And that
different confrontations.
Different of his in the moments. Yeah. Who was eating meat during their in the moments? He was chewing while he was talking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to write a song about how much I love her.
Yeah.
I will keep working out, keep making protein shakes, keep eating the food, keep doing what I do.
Right. It's like if you have any sort of talents or hobbies or interests outside of eating and developing your muscles, you're like a woman or you're an effeminate boy.
Though he did drop both a Care Bears reference and a West Side Story reference.
Oh my God, that was funny, actually. he was like, they're going to confront me, like, vaguely or something. Like, he was really, like, I gotta say, he said a few things that were kind of true. And
yeah.
That's the unfortunate thing about Chad, is that he does identify some of the more ridiculous elements of the show, but in a way that is so off-putting.
Mm-hmm. That he's just making enemies.
Yeah, that you can't even appreciate him.
I had to laugh when, like, for the group date, people were upset that they hadn't gotten a date at all. And he was like, you've lived your entire life going on a date with her up to this point.
Also, like, we've been here 5 days. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. That cracked me up because I do feel like he will say things that as a viewer who watches critically, you're kind of like, it's true. But then he'll be such a dick that you're like, why do you, like, negate all the truth you're saying by being such a dick?
The thing is that, like, we say that as viewers and we're sort of kidding. Like, we're being critical, but we're kidding. And he has no sense of humor at all.
Yeah.
He's just like, you guys are morons. But then the minute that he's inconvenienced, he's like, I came here and I want to get that date,
you know,
and I didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know? He thinks he should get the rose. You just met JoJo. Why do you want the rose so much?
Why do you care so much? Yeah.
I thought the West Side Story thing was funny. Also, I was just impressed that he knew of any musicals.
Yeah.
Well, he has to know enough about musicals to mock men. who are interested in acting or singing or performance of any kind. He's not an actor. He's not a performer. He's a man. An actual man.
And yet JoJo thinks that he's mysterious. Like, I think that she's confusing misogyny with mysteriousness.
So I did a poll on my Twitter last night. What's really wrong with Chad? And the options were MRA, sociopath, and just too honest. 21% said MRA, 15% said just too honest, 64% sociopath. So I don't know. The internet has spoken, and that's the diagnosis. I do get, in a totally non-diagnosis way, I do get sort of vibes of that. Like, I don't think that he feels for other people.
He doesn't have a whole lot of empathy.
No.
So there is so much to talk about, but I think we need to start wrapping it up. So let's get to the rose ceremony. Let's see. James Taylor, Wells, and Derek already have roses. Alex, Christian, Robbie, Luke, Chase, Jordan, Grant, Ali, Daniel, James F., Nick B., Vinny, Evan, and Chad all stick around. I just have the words seriously in all caps with three question marks next to half of these guys, like
Daniel?
Vinny and Daniel.
Stay.
At least Daniel is entertaining. Vinny is neither entertaining nor attractive.
I feel like he has potential to be entertaining.
Like, he's James S. is more entertaining than
Vinny. I agree. Yeah.
And he got sent home with Will and hipster Brandon.
Yeah. And Alex was getting worked into a real lather about how devalued his rose would be. I was like, dude, this is not the Purple Heart. This is not the Medal of Honor. This does not symbolize anything about your worth as a man. And the value does not change depending on whether Chad gets one.
Even though I know he meant well and Chad was so annoying, that the whole rose ceremony confrontation thing made me like Alex a little less because it was just like, okay, just go have a good time.
I did think it was really funny. So Chad says that he might punch Alex's teeth in. And Alex says, do you think I'm scared of you, bro? And Chad says, I think you are. I think you should be. And I'm like, okay, so first of all, Alex is a Marine. Second of all, Luke is also in the military and definitely would take Alex's side over Chad's. Like, there are several other pretty healthy built dudes in the house who would be backing Alex up over Chad. So why exactly should Alex be scared of Chad here?
I think he has just stuffed himself with his body weight worth in deli meat.
That's true. So I think he's going to be
full of protein.
Chad has a very elevated sense of self-worth.
Yes.
And also, his greatest accomplishment was being born good-looking. So farewell to Brandon, Will, and James S. Hopefully we will see them or some of them on Paradise. And next week we will look forward to two nights of Chad possibly beating one or more of the other gentlemen into a bloody pulp.
Can I just say 4 hours of
it's
Bachelor
way
or Bachelorette?
Too
days.
Much.
It's too much. I don't know anyone who enjoys that.
No.
I mean, we're into the show. Like, yeah. We all watch it.
We do once a week.
Once a week.
So I think on that note, you know, it leaves us a lot to look forward to in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Can't wait. Thanks so much for joining us today,
Charlene.
Thanks
for having me, guys.
We're going to take a short break, but stick around. After the break, we'll be joined by Sarah Gertrude Shapiro and Carol Barbie, the creator and showrunner of Lifetime's Unreal, to talk about their upcoming season, which returns next week.
Before we get back to the show, have you had a chance to find Here to Make Friends on iTunes? If not, now is the perfect time to subscribe and give us a rating. Every time we get a new subscription or review, our show climbs the iTunes chart, which helps other people discover our show. Also, feel free to leave all of your many complaints about our vocal fry there. We will roundly ignore them.
Okay, now back to the show.
So today we are speaking with Unreal co-creator Sarah Gertrude Shapiro and Unreal showrunner Carol Barbie. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
So going into season two of Unreal, what's like the one thing you really want people to know that's going to get them like excited to watch?
It's really balls to the walls. I think we go harder and bigger in season two without really trying to. We kind of just stayed inside the characters and figured out what they wanted and needed. But what they wanted and needed was fucking insane. But yeah, so I think it's just it's sort of more. And what's really great about season two is that I think we had a lot of pipe to lay. As we say in the biz, we had a lot to explain season one in terms of, like, this is what these people's jobs are. This is how the show works. And all of that's out of the way now. So it's just, again, balls to the walls, like, you know, rockets to the moon. Like, we really had nothing holding us back. It was very fun to write.
That makes us really excited to watch.
Good.
When did you decide that you wanted the next suitor to be a person of color?
I think it was pretty I've sort of always thought that would be a good move for us in season two. But I think once we wrapped season one and we had the in-between time when I was thinking about what I wanted to do season two, it felt like a no-brainer to me. And there was some talk about wanting to do a female suitor, like do a bachelorette kind of thing. And I just felt like, you know, in an era while driving while black is dangerous. Like, it's so pressing. There's hardly anything that I think is more important to be talking about. And I also felt like it was a really nice way to break out of sort of, like, mirroring back the shows that are actually on TV and just doing our own thing that we feel like is relevant and important.
Right. So you're not matched up with The Bachelorette as a direct comparison.
Because actually, you know, the thing for me that's been a really lovely challenge the entire time with the show has been to make it clear that it's not a parody or a satire, that it's its own TV show. And so I, like, really the black suitor thing was primary and important just for what it is. But the nice side effect of that is that we're actually doing something that's totally our own and that we've sort of just become our own show, which was really important to me also.
Yeah. I mean, the way that we see Rachel and Quinn handling the black suitor, Darius, and the different lady suitors, I guess, you know, the blacktivist, the Confederate flag enthusiast. Is that kind of how you think it would play out if a show like The Bachelor in the real world tried to have a black lead?
Yeah, I think it feels pretty grounded. I mean, I think the feedback that I get a lot from my previous coworkers is, like, you know, the plot is the plot of the show is 100% fiction. Like, I'm a writer first and foremost. The reality show was a day job. So it's, like, very much a TV show written and broken by writers in a writer's room, like a big dramatic TV show. So the plot is 100% fiction. But the feedback I always get is just the world feels, like, 100% believable. And it feels like everyone recognizes those moments and has had those moments. And so I do feel like we really explored the way that those guys would have to talk the network into having a black suitor. And so Quinn has this conference call with the network where she's trying to sell them on doing it. And it's really interesting to watch the dynamic of Rachel being the idealist and doing it for idealistic reasons and Quinn being like, shut the fuck up, I got this, let me talk. I'm just going to tell them Twitter is going to explode. Like, they don't give a shit about the socioeconomic, like, impact of, you know, like a romantic lead. They don't care about any of that. They just want to know what it's going to get them. And so I think it's sort of a really beautiful mother-daughter moment where Quinn is saying to Rachel, like, yes, you're naive and you have these ideals, but I can guide you through this and I can get you what you want, so let me do it for you. What we always do is primarily break the story for Quinn and Rachel first, and then we do everything else after that. So while I wanted to have a black suitor, what also worked really well about that was what I wanted for Quinn and Rachel in this season was very specifically for Rachel to have sort of sold her soul and be, like, full of darkness but try to do one last great thing. And so it worked really well for their story as well.
I love that. I was going to ask, you know, the central relationship of the first season really felt like it was sort of a fucked up platonic love story between Quinn and Rachel. And I assume from what you're saying, we're going to see that dynamic again in season two.
Yeah. It was how I sold the show, and it's what we always do. I don't know if, Carol, if you want to speak to that more, but it's sort of how we break the story.
It absolutely is. They're such fascinating characters, and they go to such dark places that it's really fun to sort of figure out where they are. We usually start with Rachel because she's the spine of everything. And the show last year was such a fight for Rachel's soul. So this year, at the end of last season, she's in a bad place, and Quinn has sort of helped get her there. So we start this season with Rachel having made a deal with Quinn. Instead of having her come back and be, at odds with Quinn, they've kind of come to a détente, and Quinn has promoted her and made her showrunner, even though she kind of believes that she's not ready for it. And so so Quinn is saying, yeah, you're the showrunner, but you see very quickly that Quinn can't let go. And so you've got them at odds, and yet they're on the same team.
Yeah. They get matching tattoos that say money, dick, power. It's a it's a list.
Oh my God.
It's a list of priorities so they don't ever fuck up again and fall for their crack, you know, because they sort of smoked their own crack last season. And so it's to sort of keep them sober and be like, these are the things we're after. And I think that because they are sort of soulmates and they are our couple, they're the show's couple, they can get everything they need from each other except for dick. That's like the one thing they have to go out and find, which is readily available and never a problem. So it's just sort of like, keep it on the list is what it is. Don't fall for it. And of course, that doesn't last very long either.
I loved what at the beginning of the year when Sarah was talking about what we were going to do for the season, she said that Rachel and Quinn both feel like last year we fell for the princess fantasy ourselves, and that did not work out for us. So fuck it, we're going to be ballers this year. We're going to act like men. We're going to live like men. And so it's money, dick, power. So
maybe I need to get that tattoo.
I think that a lot of women will be getting
that tattoo.
How do you feel about like inspiring a lot of women to get that tattoo? Does that make you feel good?
I think it's a bad fucking idea. I think if you watch past episode 3, you'll realize it's a pretty bad idea.
It kind of haunts Quinn and Rachel.
I think someone who's going to get a tattoo like that is not going to wait until episode 3 to go get that tattoo.
That's right.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I do think
Cosmo's already picked it. Cosmo was like, awesome tattoo. I was like,
that wasn't quite the point. It was the...
It kind of is the point that, like, I think the funny part about it, too, is there's something in, I think it's in episode 1 where Quinn, you know, one of the girls is, like, getting changed into a bathing suit, and she's like, what the fuck is that? Like, tramp stamp. She's like, cover up, wifeys don't have tattoos. And there's such a great moment in that of being, like, by branding themselves, they've sort of been like, we're not wifeys.
Right.
Like, we're unmarriable. And it's kind of this blood pact that they make with each other. Like, we're done. Like, we're not trying to get married anymore. Like, we just have each other. And I'm not trying, you know what I mean? By stamping themselves and branding themselves, they're like, we're not chosen women. We only have each other.
It's funny because that really speaks to what a regressive world this is, that like getting a tattoo is like you're beyond the pale.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
What is respectable as a woman, which is such like a 1950s concept. And but on the show, yeah.
And what's interesting too about these characters is the dichotomy of, yeah, they get those tattoos but as time goes on, they both kind of meet people this season where they can see a beautiful life outside of Everlasting for themselves, away from each other and away from Everlasting. And you see them sort of think about how that could possibly work out and kind of start getting sold on that dream. And then we see how that goes.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because both the guys that show up from them, I mean, you know, last year, very intentionally, Adam was almost Prince Charming. I mean, he's like British and he keeps talking about Saint-Tropez.
The dream.
Yeah. He has a castle.
So that was very much like the real princess fantasy. And Quinn even sort of makes fun of Chet in season 1 about like, you know, my prince was actually a fat, you know, drug-addled toad. But whatever, he's my prince. But what Carol's saying about the guys that show up this year is that they seem more plausible. They're kind of husband material. They're guys that show up like... There's a nice Jewish boy who shows up who's got, like, his family's got a house in Martha's Vineyard and he went to Brown and whatever. So there's that kind of stuff. But I think that ultimately they keep coming back to the fact that it – you say 1950s, I say, like, 1880s. Like, I think that they actually are sort of, like, really romantic at heart and sort of have these very regressive ideas about stuff. And I don't think that they're sure they're worthy. And I think that's something that we look at a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's something that a lot of – people watching can relate to this tension between like, I'm going to go balls out and also, wait, I kind of want these other things.
Yeah.
And how do I navigate that? I mean, these characters defy kind of being pigeonholed, and that's a really, really nice thing.
Yeah.
Chet is another favorite character of ours.
And I love Chet so much.
I have a deep love for Chet.
But we've heard that in season 2, he explores the world of men's rights activism.
He does.
And, you know, as two women who write for the internet, we have been on the receiving end of some lovely men's rights activism.
Yeah.
So we're pretty excited about this storyline. Were you at all nervous about kind of poking that
hornet's nest. I was wildly nervous about it. I started texting with Craig about it like a few months before we started because I was just sort of like, heard you lost a lot of weight. Keep it off because here's what's happening. And and he and I sort of went down the rabbit hole on researching that stuff together. And it is a really, really dark corner of the internet. But what I was interested in talking about was more of what real relatable human need does that movement come out of? Like, there is, like, a real totally relatable absence in men's life of purpose and power, I think, sometimes, that is fostering that movement that is super scary and horrible, and I totally condemn it. But there is a top line of that, which is sort of what Chet is navigating within, which is about his manhood and his purpose and how to be a man with all of these empowered women around you. So it's like, if you're not in charge and you're not the leader, then, like, who are you? And, you know, and sort of feeling like he got castrated last year. And it was interesting. We were talking to, I think when Carol and I were sitting down with writers for this season, a guy came in and was talking about the end of season one. And we always thought that, like, Quinn broke Chet's heart when she handed the ring back. That was a big scene for us. When we edited that scene, we were like, oh, it's so heartbreaking because he really seems crushed. And the guy that we were talking to, who's a real dude, was like, he's like, oh, my God, who gives a fuck about that moment? He's like, when she humiliated him in front of the head of the network, that was the end of their relationship. Yeah. And it was all about castration and power.
That's so interesting.
Yes. So then we were able to sort of focus. And we actually sought out writers for Chet mm-hmm. this year because, like, I have a hard time writing men. I was talking about this yesterday. Yeah. I love Chet so much now that I can definitely write for him and I can definitely write for the guys on the show. But I really wanted to make sure we had a voice in the room that understood the men's rights stuff, like, on some sort of level that could relate to what Chet was going through. And it was really great insight to hear that that was the moment and that really what had happened for Chet in season one was that he got castrated by Quinn. And it helped inform what we were doing. So it's good.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really intrigued by how you talked about, Sarah, how difficult it was for you to learn how to write fully fleshed out dude characters and how you notice women in this very detailed way, but men are just kind of like man blurs. And
true.
I thought it was really interesting, too, because that's kind of how a lot of people talk about The Bachelorette is like it's not as fun because that's just a bunch of guys in suits and like they're all the same. Is this just like a thing about men? Like, why are they so hard to tell apart?
That's a great question, but I actually think it's a unique problem to me because I think that most television writers, there are so many shows with male leads.
Yeah.
It's just I don't watch that kind of TV. I mean, I guess I do. Like, I watch Mad Men religiously, but I just think a lot of people see the world, a lot of male writers, I guess, see the world with men as the main characters. I just have never experienced my life that way, and I don't see the world that way. And so coming into it, I was saying yesterday on the Vulture panel that I actually had to have these really awkward friend research dates with guys because my girlfriend at the time, it was a DP, and she hung out with guys all the time. And I was like, do you think you could set me up with some guys to hang out with? And she was like, what do you want to do with them? I'm like, so I would go to a bar and be like, so yeah, like, so like, what do you do with yourself and your feelings? And they were like, what are you talking about? But so, yeah, I don't think men are hard to describe because I think that male writers have a really easy, wonderful time describing men. But I do think that it's really hard to describe when you're sort of coming from the female gaze like that and your world is sort of built of women. It's hard to figure out how to locate those people, at least for me. You should talk about that, though.
Well, but yeah. I also think as a television writer,
yeah.
It's almost less of a male-female starting point as it is a leading character and a character – you know, a character actor and a leading actor point of view, because most leads on television are men. And so people are used to writing men and having them have purpose and having them have a drive and an arc and all that stuff. What's amazing about this show is that the two leads are these women, and they're not perfect, lovely, wonderful women. They are messed up, and it's so much fun. So there's almost no kind of classic lead on the show. They're all characters, and it's so much fun to write that way. So
yeah.
It is interesting having the men be sort of the token characters on the show.
I actually have no intention about being cruel about it.
Like,
I love our actors. I love the characters we wrote. Like, I have a lot of compassion for them. It's just and it's interesting, too, with Quinn and Rachel, like, I kind of hate having to have a male reference point for them. But we sometimes talk about, like, with dialogue with them, it'll come in and it's like, rule of thumb for me is just make sure they're talking to each other like Walt and Jesse. and not like Sabrina and Blair. Those are the like so like so and then when I was like, wait, what am I trying to say when I say that? And I think that it's about they talk about work mm-hmm. and mentorship mm-hmm. and strategy and power and dominance. And they talk about like you're fucking up, you need to stop fucking up because we need to win. As opposed to you hurt my feelings. So like they're it's just an interesting mm-hmm. way to calibrate their dialogue. And again, like I sort of loathe that there has to be a male reference point for it, but I think that having spent a lot of my life at work and working with women, that is how we talk to mm-hmm. each other when we're working. It's about being effective and getting the job done.
And I think, unfortunately, we just haven't really seen that kind of dynamic yeah. much between women on TV because the majority of people running TV shows and writing TV yep. shows are men. The majority of leads are men. So I actually appreciate you admitting that it's hard to write male characters and going out and looking for people to fill out those voices, because I don't think we see the same care paid to the supporting female characters on a lot of shows where the men are leads.
Even on our show with the female contestants, we always have this huge cast of female contestants. Every single one of them has a unique personality, has a unique point of view, has an arc, has something they want, has some reason they've come here, has something that could break their heart. So we take a lot of care with that, and I think you wouldn't necessarily see that on a show where it's sort of a typical show. We do that with the men, too. I mean, I feel like Josh Kelly's character of Jeremy
yeah.
is a good example of that, because he was such the romantic, you know, lead last year with Rachel, and yet it was always sort of seen that he wasn't the man for her forever, but he was such a good person. But they leave him, you guys left him in such a dark place. And so we pick up this year and we say, all right, well, where is that guy now? And who does he become? And rather than keep him in the same place he was last year, no, it's Josh 2.0. Like, where is he now? And I think he has a really interesting run. He gets to go to some really deep, dark places.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like, with the Bachelorette and shows like that, that it's easy to, like, differentiate minor female characters with, like, this one is, like, a blonde and this one yeah. is a brunette and that one wears tight bandage dresses. And
yeah.
men are all wearing suits and, like,
so V-necks.
If you don't do, like, if you don't do the work to flesh them out, you can't tell them apart. But we're so used to our male characters being, like, up there enough that they get that personality and they get fleshed out.
There's mm-hmm. even like a percentage numbers game with that too, like Carol was saying, because Carol really has written on a huge array of television shows and has written male leads. I've never done that. You know, like she's done it. But on The Bachelorette, for example, there's 25 dudes mm-hmm. and just that mass, they become the mass.
Yeah.
And like, you know what I mean? And I think that ratio is sort of inverted and that makes it harder. I've said when I was making The Bachelorette, it's a much harder TV show to make because men are just, it's like, you're like, hey, dude, let's just talk, you know, get him on camera and be like, I feel like Doug was really like moving in on you and really, really like sort of talking shit about you. And the guy's like, that dude's cool. I don't know. And you're like, oh my God, I cannot make a TV show out of that.
They need to go the men's rights activist yeah. yeah. route. Yeah.
Right.
Like, don't you feel like Doug sort of castrated you in that yeah. moment back there?
And you're like, they're like, why are you talking about my balls? Like, I find it really, really hard to make television with a bunch of dudes, but
yeah, they are less amusing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that it seems like, I don't watch the show anymore, but it seems like the more recent Bachelorettes that, from what I've seen from teasers and stuff, it's like they sort of are playing into roles now and amping up their own drama. Is that true?
I do think that there is a move to take a little bit more agency by yeah. Bachelor. Like, and that's one of the things that I was really interested by with Anna's character last season, is that her sort of dramatic conclusion when she runs away from the wedding reminded me so much of Andy Dorfman uh-huh. on The Bachelor when she just comes out of the fantasy suite and tells Juan Pablo, you know,
this
you
was
terrible.
A nightmare.
This
You're
was awful.
Awful.
And that was sort of the setup for her to become the Bachelorette, is when the whole audience was like, oh, she's like a badass. Like, uh-huh. she's going to tell him, like, the deal. And so I was sort of like, that's when I was sort of wondering if you were going to go with a female suitor the next season.
Yeah, I think that's where the conversation came from, was about Anna. You know, like
she was awesome.
She was super awesome, and I don't rule that out. You know what I mean? Like, I think that she's still in our universe. She's marrying Freddie Stroman.
Yeah, we're gonna ask about that. Like, you guys basically have a better track record at this point than the actual Bachelor.
Not so trying to brag, but
but brag a little.
I'm bragging a little. I'm bragging a little. No, those guys are great. It's like they're carved out of the same piece of alabaster. It's so cute.
They're like a cake topper pair.
Yeah,
perfect.
They are. They're amazing. Every time I look over at them, I'm like, I'll be like in my like fucked up world. Everything's all crazy and stressed out. And then I'll look over and it's like a Disney movie. And then I'm like, hold on. And there's like birds flying around my head.
Animals like, start making lovely noises. Music erupts.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how you handled writing men in the writer's room. But what about writing this like really and like intense racial plot this season? What was that like for you guys? Especially like you're running the show as white women. Quinn and Rachel are running their show about a black suitor as white women. That's like a lot of really interesting dynamics there. So how did you guys deal with that?
I sort of came in to the room this year after having talked to Carol about what I wanted to do, and then sort of put it to the writer's room. There are two women of color in our room, and definitely gave them sort of primary importance in that conversation, and just said, so this is what I would like to do this season. I know it's really problematic. I'm really scared. I feel like it's going to be pretty uncomfortable at times. I feel like it's worth doing. Do you guys feel like it's worth doing? And we had that conversation, and it felt like everybody was on board and that it did feel worth doing. And then we just spent the first couple of weeks, a lot of what we did was sort of have those two writers talk about their experiences as black women in terms of, like, dating and also, you know, there's conversations about football and black men and violence against black men and men in the media and what it means to have a black romantic lead. And we just spent a lot of time talking and letting them talk and listening, because I think that that was really important to me, that we weren't sort of prescribing what we should do, but that we were just listening to what their experience actually was. And then they pretty much had free rein for the rest of the season, if anything felt like we weren't hitting it right, to just sort of nix it. And then we had to go about just writing a TV show and making, you know, coming up with the most interesting plot. But I think that there were some really primary things put in place. And I was shocked. I felt like in those 2 weeks, like, I learned more about race than I could even have imagined. And I feel like I'm a person who's paid a lot of attention to it. But specifically some of the problems with white feminism when it comes to black women. And I just – that was something that I peripherally had thought about but just hadn't actually sat and listened to two black women sort of tell me what their experience is with it. And that was super informative to how – we wrote Rachel and Ruby, who's the black activist character. But is that pretty much?
Absolutely. And yeah. I'm from the South. I'm from North Carolina, and I've written about race a lot. It's sort of like it creeps into everything because it's sort of the world I have always lived in. And BJ, our first black bachelor, is actually from North Carolina too. So what I kept saying all along the way was, like, I'm all about writing about race, but let's just make sure that we do it in a really specific, truthful way. Because what's hard as a Southerner is when you see those stories told, the Southerners are all sort of caricatures. That's not necessarily because anybody is trying to just intentionally be insulting the Southerners. They just have seen movies and television where that's the way Southerners are presented. So that was sort of my thing all the way through, is just making sure that literally the character of Beth Ann, who's got the Confederate flag bikini on, which is insane. Like, the Confederate flag is the most hateful symbol, and it is in the South as well. There's a very small group of people who will say otherwise. So I know how offensive that symbol is. But to make that character real and to have her be someone with a point of view where she's just never been outside of her own circle of family and friends, and she's never been to the wider world, and she doesn't question her beliefs or her bikini until she does. And what I love is how there's a line in there where she actually falls in love with Darius, with the black suitor, and while she's wearing a bikini, I mean, this Confederate flag, and there's this idea of, you know, racism is confusing and race is confusing, and that's how it is in the South. So anyway, those were some of the most heated conversations for me, just making sure that we were specific and true.
Yeah, and it was also just such great story fodder, because it Also for Jay, who's a really wonderful character on our show, he's one of the other producers, and he is Black. And I think that it was such great story fodder in terms of sort of activating him, because Rachel brings in a Black suitor, is taking all this credit for it, patting herself on the back for it, and treating him like a peon and ordering him around, like in terms of serving her greater purpose. And the complexities of that are so, so fucked up and so hard to even look at. But that's when we were having the conversations about white feminism and sort of white liberalism and the privilege of having a liberal arts education and feeling really holier than thou, and all of those sort of white paternalism coming in and being like, I know better for you guys, and I'm going to save you, and I'll make a right decision, and look at what I've done. And I'm so, you know, and we really thought about it in terms of Rachel sort of, again, just patting herself on the back and taking a lot of credit for something she couldn't possibly understand.
I think these are conversations that are happening a lot in the wider world. So it's exciting to me to see a show like yours tackling that. I think pop culture is just really powerful and kind of reactivating these conversations.
And I was going to say, too, it just definitely never felt safe. Like, you know what I mean?
In a good way.
Yeah. It never felt like a safe zone. Like, it wasn't like we got to a place where we're like, oh, yeah, we're bulletproof. No one's going to freak out on Twitter. We are like good-hearted people trying to do the best we can to write this story as honestly and humanly as we can. And we're probably going to fuck up at some point, but we think it's worth doing.
And there's no way that somebody's not going to be upset and offended, of course. But one of the things I think is really interesting between Rachel and Jay is that they are friends and they have sort of come up through the ranks together. So they're sort of on the same level, but they're not, because Rachel now has been raised up above him, even though she's a little less stable and maybe not ready to have that. And so to watch them on so many different levels, to watch them just as friends, to watch them as co-workers, to watch them as co-workers who one feels the other is being given something that's not due to them. But then there comes a point in the season where I think everybody sort of starts the season out, including the Black Bachelor, saying, you know, I'm not about race. Like, I don't have a big opinion. I don't want to, you know, we're doing this because it'll be noisy television. There comes a point.
Except for Rachel, who's always like,
Rachel's like, I'm going to change the world. She keeps saying, she has a great line, I'm not manic, I'm changing the world. And you're like, you're totally manic. But there comes a point in the season where nobody can stay on the fence anymore, where everybody has to figure out where they are. And that gets really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I know, obviously, that you've differentiated yourself from the actual Bachelor franchise, but this does come at an interesting moment, given that we were sort of promised by Paul Lee that the next Bachelorette would be a woman of color. Then he exited. And, of course, now we have JoJo as the lead, who is white appearing. She is half Persian. white presenting, despite the fact she is half Persian. So I wonder kind of what you think about your show going to that place before the actual franchise does, and it's been running since 2002.
I don't know. I mean, again, like, it wasn't the reason to do it. I think it, for me, is like, we have a platform, we have a responsibility to do something with that platform. You know, we are what we are as a TV show, but I think that, again, it was one of the reasons we all held hands and said, let's do this, because it's better than not doing it. Even though it is problematic, even though it's a show run by two white women, like, it's like, that's problematic, but it's still worth doing. And I think that it just takes the balls to do it, even though you might get in trouble and even though ad sales might not like it or whatever it is that scares them. It's just like taking that leap. And I do think it's time.
It's time.
And not to sound too much like Quinn, but I really feel like in television, the only safe place is the not safe place. The only place to really have a show that matters or gets any sort of eyeballs on it is to do things that provoke. And I think it's a good conversation to have.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what Chris Harrison is going to say, because he's really pushed back on questions about a bachelor, a bachelorette of color. And he also—
I haven't heard what he said.
Yeah, what's that all about?
We asked him about this.
Yeah.
And his answer was sort of, we wouldn't want to choose a lead that we didn't think could carry the show.
And kind of implies that it could be a financial strain. That he basically implied that, you know, the show employs a lot of people, so they wouldn't want to choose someone who could put those
who's not Jobs viable.
And, Jeopardy. And that assumes yeah. that, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Right, right. There's a lot in that answer.
But I would say this, though. It's like, I mean, I think that's probably based on research. I don't think that, like, that may not be Chris's personal opinion. I think the fact that that Cheerios commercial, I don't know if you guys know what that Cheerios commercial was, but it was like a biracial family with a black dad and a white wife and a very cute little kid who brought some Cheerios to her dad, and the KKK like came out to take them down. I think that it's scary, legitimately scary for them, because I think that a black man dating white women is still really controversial in 2016. And I think that is absolutely insane, but it appears to be true.
Yeah. Well, we could always have a black bachelorette. I think that would be... Yeah. Uncontroversial for everyone.
Yeah. But I also think it is a little antiquated. Like, I don't know. It does feel a little bit behind the times to me that they really feel like it would take down the show or that people would lose their jobs. I'm not sure that that's accurate at this point.
Yeah. I think you might actually invite a whole new audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that, like, as someone who covers race and entertainment from time to time, that interests me is how often these movies or TV shows get made where they're like, oh, we had to cast this role that was originally written for a black person or an Asian person as white for financial reasons. And then the show is like a big flop.
Yeah.
And it's like, right. I think a lot of it is fear rather than actual research, is that it's what they're used to, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily what people really want anymore.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how, like, The Bachelor is navigating that, and how Unreal is navigating that in a very different way.
TBD, guys. TBD, June 6th. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah. I personally can't wait.
Same.
You guys are awesome. Thanks so much for good questions.
You are
awesome.
So much. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. And now, welcome to Feminism Fails, where we rate the most cringeworthy anti-lady moments of the week on our very own patented Feminism Fail Scale.
1. You do you, bro. 2. That's questionable. 3. Not cool, people. 4. The 1950s are back. 5. Gender equality is straight up dead.
And now it's Feminism Fails. This whole episode was a steaming heap of hot misogynistic trash. But here are some standout moments. First, Chad insists he doesn't know JoJo well enough to say anything nice about her, but he does know her well enough to repeatedly speak for what she wants in a man. Him, basically. That's a 5. Sorry, Chad, you're not in charge of JoJo.
And then the ESPN announcers say they're there to protect JoJo and choose a man for her, like Big Brothers. That's also a 5, because I'm sorry, strange men who have met JoJo for the first time today. You maybe don't actually need to protect her or speak for her needs.
Yeah, I think that brothers stopped choosing our spouses, like, several hundred years ago.
Well, here's hoping.
Next, Chad calls JoJo a nag, then spins it as supreme manly honesty. We're giving that a 5, because if I have to hear the word nag associated with women expressing their feelings ever again, I might just have my head explode in a giant bloody ball.
I think your head might explode by the time Chad actually gets kicked off this thing.
That is true.
And then, of course, our fair ESPN announcers say hands off the merchandise when Chad picks JoJo up during a challenge during the ESPN date, which would make JoJo the merchandise. Ugh, ugh, 5.
Yeah, you cannot get much more literal with objectification. And finally, at the firefighting challenge group date, the men compete to see who can make sure JoJo is safe in an emergency, like a damsel in distress, because that's not why we pay taxes, to make sure we have emergency services in our modern society.
Thank you for your service, Grant.
Yes, that's a 5.
And now for our tweet of the week. This week it comes from Jenny Jaffe, at Jenny Jaffe. I would be a terrible bachelorette, but I do want 20 bland men to applaud everything I do. So what are my options?
Not looking good. Sorry.
We do wonder the same thing, Jenny. And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guests, Charlene Joint, Sarah Gertrude Shapiro, and Carol Barbie. And of course, thanks to our producer, Nick Offenberg.
Have you had a chance to find Here to Make Friends on iTunes? If not, now is the perfect time to subscribe and give us a rating and let us know how much you hate our voices. Every time we get a new subscription or review, our show climbs the iTunes chart, which helps other people discover our show. In related news, Here to Make Friends is now on Facebook. Please like us. It makes us feel so loved. And you'll see all the fun memes and GIFs and news articles we post, and our live show streaming Monday nights after The Bachelorette. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose. Or you can send us an email, heretomakefriends@huffingtonpost.com.
Thanks for listening. Check back next week for a special double recap episode. Whew, thanks, ABC.